Chapter 7. Owen. Feeling refreshed after a night in the Nightingale camp, Zara, Talon, and I begin the last leg of our journey to Tarsus. Using horses given to us by the rebels, we make our way to the main road, the path surprisingly crowded in the faint light of dawn. The baths that were provided to us before bed were nothing special, but after weeks spent in the desert, covered head to foot in sweat and filth, it felt like an incredible luxury. The cold water washed away the dirt, and the soap cut through the grime like a knife, making us feel clean for the first time in weeks. We didn't have fresh clothes to change into, a fact that Zara lamented on more than one occasion, but at least the smell was a marked improvement. It doesn't take long for the white stone walls to come into view. The capital is just how I remember it, a sprawling cityscape of peaks, arches, and crenellated towers. One difference, however, is glaringly obvious. The Pillar of Radiance is no longer there. It reminds me of a buck whose antlers have been cut away, its most distinctive feature inexplicably gone. The absence is so startling that Zara gasps upon noticing the missing tower and its accompanying beam of light. We rein our horses in, stopping in the middle of the busy road.
"It's really gone," she says, lamenting. "Light almighty! The whole tower, it's just gone."
"Nobody knows what happened," Talon replies, his tone unusually somber. "One minute it was there, and the next it just exploded. The whole thing came down a few minutes later, crushing almost an entire district." She pales.
"How awful."
I don't say anything, my hands resting on the pommel of my saddle. What force could have destroyed a building of that size, I wonder, thinking back to the day when Zara had taken me to see the Heart of Light? Did the magic ultimately fail, or was it somehow intentional? It galls me to think that we may never find out the answer. After a moment, Zara speaks up again.
"The Conclave, are they—"
Talon shrugs and looks down at his horse, unable to meet Zara's gaze.
"A lot of mages died," he says softly. "There are some survivors, but I've heard the circle's in bad shape. No one really knows what to do."
She hesitates before asking,
"And the High Magus?"
Talon shakes his head, looking up before quickly glancing away.
"She was there when Elias confronted Aethelgar. Before he died, the king stabbed her.
She's dead." "I'm sorry, Zara." She stares at him for a long time, her expression as blank as a sheet of parchment. Her eyes grow misty, though, and a single tear rolls down her cheek, her lips tightening to a thin line, probably to keep from trembling. She wipes the tear away with the back of her hand, sniffing and then clearing her throat.
"Well," she says brusquely, "many more will die if we don't do something. It's time we were off."
"Zara," I begin, inching my horse closer to hers. "Are you—"
"I'm fine,"
she replies, her voice still thick with emotion as she grabs her reins.
"We've dawdled long enough. Let's go."
With that, she digs her heels into her horse's sides, urging the beast forward, leaving me and Talon to catch up. We continue the rest of the way in silence, a pall settling over us as we navigate the burgeoning highway. An enormous crowd gathers outside the gates, refugees from all walks of life clamoring to get inside the city. They cluster on the road, hundreds shouting for the nervous-looking guards to let them in. As we draw near, we're forced to dismount. "What's going on?" I ask one of those gathered, a surly, balding man with a patch over his left eye.
"Damned knights won't open the gates," the man drawls angrily. "They say there isn't enough room in the city. Don't they know there are demons out here? We'll be killed if they don't let us in."
A man next to him lets out a frustrated and vulgar yell of agreement. We guide our horses through the crowd, at times forcing our way through to the front. There we find that the portcullis is down, and the gates are barred, a contingent of knights in full plate armor standing watch outside. The visors on their helmets are lowered, and their shields are up, swords and spears clutched anxiously in their hands. One of the men steps forward as we approach, raising his blade warily.
"Get back," he warns, eyes narrowing beneath his helm. I'll not tell you again. Easy, mate, Talon says, lifting his good hand to show he's unarmed. This one's a conclave mage, and that one's a ranger like me. We're with Elias Keen. We need to get through and pass along some important information.
I can see uncertainty enter the knight's stance, his sword point lowering just a bit as he considers Talon's words. He confers with a man standing next to him while another knight behind the shield wall of soldiers speaks up.
Talon Meacham, what are you doing on this side of the wall? I thought you'd be holed up in a tavern somewhere, drinking yourself silly.
Talon squints, then smiles broadly in recognition.
Is that you under all that metal, Gavrin? I hardly recognized you without a barmaid on your lap.
The speaker, Gavrin, nudges the other two knights with a mailed fist.
These ones are clear to enter, Captain. They're who they say they are. I've never known a ranger to drink quite so much as this one. Fine, the captain says, stepping to the side. But be quick about it. I don't want this rabble getting any ideas about pushing through.
We lead our horses past the line of knights, Talon shrugging sheepishly at Zara and me.
Ale is a great equalizer, my friends. Nightingale, ranger, knight, in a tavern, are all the same.
Zara rolls her eyes and mutters something under her breath. Iron wheels grind as the portcullis is raised, the gates of Tarsus swinging inward to allow us passage. We enter through the portal, the gate closing behind us immediately as we step onto a wide cobblestone street. I take in the scene before me, realizing that more has changed within the city than I previously thought. A haze of disquiet hangs in the air, mirroring in a way the dark clouds that seem to have followed us here. The expansive boulevards, once teeming with all manner of city folk, are oddly deserted, the storefronts empty and windows shuttered. Groups of huddled figures flit through the streets like packs of wild dogs, glaring at each other and moving swiftly from alley to darkened alley. Even the stones are drab and washed out, everything covered in a dull layer of dust, the streets choked with filthy, half-melted slush. This doesn't feel overcrowded, I think, suddenly angry for the plight of the refugees locked outside. 11 hells, it feels empty.
Light, Zara whispers, looking over the dreary sight. What's become of my city?
This isn't even the worst of it, Talon replies, leading us away from the gates. Without the king to enforce the laws, criminals have grown bold. They loot and pillage as they please. And in the poorer districts, riots have broken out. The common people think the nobles are hoarding food.
Winter has only just begun, I point out, keeping a wary eye on our surroundings. Surely there's still plenty of food to go around. Talon gives me a half shrug.
Crises make people do crazy things. Maybe they're worried about the demons or the presence of all the refugees. The point is, distrust has spread like a plague, and I think it's only going to get worse.
An uneasy silence settles over us as we walk, passing through derelict neighborhoods and vacant market squares. Guard patrols are common in some of the wealthier areas, marching in groups of 10 or more, spears held at the ready. The few people we do see eye us suspiciously, their hands straying to potential weapons as they watch us pass.
Not the reception I was expecting, I murmur to Zara over the sound of clopping hooves.
No, she agrees.
No, it isn't.
As we draw near to the center of the city, we begin to see greater evidence of the pillar's destruction. Rubble and chunks of stone have been pushed to the side like refuse, pointedly ignored by those few citizens passing by. The signs are everywhere. A broken window here, a caved-in roof there, the devastation growing more apparent the further we go. Eventually, we enter a neighborhood that's been completely decimated by the collapse. Most of the buildings are crushed, reduced to piles of debris, while others are left half-standing, broken skeletons of their former selves. The atmosphere continues to be eerily quiet, the air dusty and still as a forgotten tomb. Zara looks to be on the verge of being ill.
So much destruction, she says, her voice barely above a whisper. So much death. Is this what we can expect from the R'lyeh in the coming days?
Taking her hand, I give her a comforting squeeze.
Not if we can help it.
Turning, I say to Talon, come on, let's get out of here.
He nods and silently leads us on, taking us out of this district that's been reduced to little more than a graveyard.
It's not much further now, he says after a few minutes. The mages have set up shop in the academy, now that, well, you know. I guess they figured it would be a good place to run their operations.
Zara perks up.
The academy? Light, it feels like I haven't been there in ages.
Talon nods.
It's a nice place, if you don't mind the smell of old books, that is.
This seems to lighten Zara's mood, and I smile faintly.
Old books? Yes, that'll suit Zara just fine.
Speaking of old books, he goes on with an air of nonchalance, there may be a few waiting for you at the academy. Ones you brought with you from Dunmar City.
She frowns. Then suddenly her eyes widen in shock.
You found my books? I thought I'd lost them forever.
The corner of his mouth twitches up. Come now, Zara. Forever? Nothing's truly lost forever.
But they were on my horse. How did you find her?
Oh, that old mare knew where to go. We knew something was wrong when your horse came back riderless and your books were still strapped to the saddle. You'd save those before you'd save an actual person.
Well, before you'd save me, at least. Talon raises his eyebrow with a smirk as he glances from me to her and back again.
If I didn't know better, I'd think Zara would have just about hugged him, and she almost did before she dropped her arms at the last second, swinging them back and forth, a wide smile splitting her face.
Thank you, Talon. Truly, thank you.
Don't mention it. All in a day's work. You two can go about saving the world. I'm content to just save a few moldy books.
He winks and continues ahead. We enter a more affluent part of the city, the streets showing few, if any, signs of destruction. Despite the dire circumstances, everything appears well kept and clean. Guards can be seen in greater abundance, and more people seem willing to brave the streets, traders selling wares without fear of them being stolen. We approach a large complex of old stone buildings surrounded by a finely wrought iron fence. Thick hedges and carefully manicured gardens fill the space between the buildings, shoots of ivy crawling up the outside walls like spidery veins. We stop before the entrance of the academy and are instantly surrounded by guards, armor-clad soldiers and blue-robed mages.
Halt! The leader commands, a glowing crystal held like a tiny knife in front of him. Who goes there?
Zara steps forward.
I am Zara Denel, Magus of the Conclave and Seeker to the High Magus Sylvania Holden.
Several of the mages eye each other, the non-magical guards relaxing.
Seeker Denel, the leader says, frowning. I've heard of you before.
I've come to confer with the Circle, she goes on. It's a matter of grave importance. Are the magisters here?
They are, the mage replies. What's left of them, anyway? They're not accepting visitors, though. Not even from fellow mages.
Zara regards him coolly for a moment before responding.
I see. And who is the High Magus now, if I may ask?
He shifts uncomfortably.
That's yet to be decided. Magisters Roth and Ivor are in discussions as to who should be chosen.
Her expression brightens.
Roth? She interrupts. He's alive? That's perfect. I assure you, Magus, that Magister Roth will want to speak with me immediately. He and I are close, and the information we carry is of the utmost importance.
The mage chews his lip, his eyes narrowing as he looks at each of the three of us in turn.
I suppose it couldn't hurt to send a runner, he says at length. But know that the Circle is very, very busy trying to rebuild the Conclave. I doubt they'll have time to bother with someone so...
He pauses, finally settling on the word, inexperienced. Zara ignores the slight, bowing her head and replying,
thank you for your help.
The mage turns to one of the guards.
Escort them to the Cerulean Hall. Seeker Denel is permitted to visit the Circle, but these two,
he looks disapprovingly at Talon and me,
must stay in the waiting area. Is that understood?
Yes, Magus,
the guard replies. He rests a hand on the hilt of his sword and takes a step toward the wrought iron gate.
Follow me, please.
Amazing, isn't it? Even in times like these, mages can't help but live in luxury.
Talon lounges on a plush couch lined with fur, surrounded by small decorative pillows covered with gold thread embroidery. After sitting down, he had sunk so far into the stuffing that it now looks like the sofa is trying to devour him. What did you expect, Tal? I ask, thumbing through a book filled with strange symbols and antiquated pictures. They are mages, after all.
This is why the common people are rioting,
he remarks, trying unsuccessfully to extricate himself from the couch's stuffing. After a few attempts, he sinks back down, resignedly nibbling on a cherry tart from off a nearby platter. Zara departed soon after our arrival at the academy, following a steward to find a new set of robes before meeting with the circle. Talon and I were given some food and sent here to this lavishly decorated waiting room in one of the grand stone buildings. I was also given a fresh green tunic and a pair of doeskin trousers, my ranger cloak and other clothes taken to the launderer for cleaning. Talon sighs around a mouthful of cherry tart.
We've been here for hours, mate. How much longer do you think they'll be?
I shrug. Not sure. Hopefully not too much longer. He frowns at me.
How are you not bored out of your mind?
A week ago I thought I'd never step foot in the kingdom again, I reply, absently flipping another page and examining a faded picture of an old castle. Now we're back in Tarsus and Zara is meeting with the Circle. We're where we're supposed to be. I glance up, meeting Talon's gaze and giving him another half shrug. I don't know, Tal. I guess I'm just happy to have a roof over my head again. A little boredom is a nice change of pace. He eyes me for a moment, then rests his head back against the couch, the cushions partially covering his ears.
A lot more relaxed now, aren't we? The wastes have changed you, Owen. Maybe all that sun cooked your brain.
I smile faintly, returning to my book.
Maybe you're right.
The door to the waiting room opens and several figures step inside. All are men, heavily armed and dressed in black, each wearing the symbol of the Nightingales, a silver bird in flight sewn over their right breast. Talon gets to his feet with some difficulty, finally managing to heave himself from the voracious sofa, and I close the book shut with a snap, looking up to regard the newcomers. One of them, a man with a puckered scar extending from his hairline to his right eyebrow, steps forward and extends a hand.
"Sorry to keep you waiting. We've been in meetings all day. My name is Chris Gallo, Captain to Protector Elias Keane."
"Well met," I say, shaking his hand and meeting his steely gaze. "I'm Owen Lund, and this is my friend Talon Meacham."
"Hello, Chris,"
Talon says cheerfully. The Nightingale gives him a guarded look.
"Yes, I'm already well acquainted with Apprentice Meacham."
He says his name with thinly veiled contempt. I glance over at Talon. He smiles sheepishly.
"It was just a little brawl over a game of cards. Some git accused me of cheating. Can you believe that? Old Chris here tried to break it up and accidentally got a fat lip and a keg broken over his head. Sorry about that, by the way."
"At any rate," Chris continues, pointedly ignoring Talon's story, "the mages sent for us. I'm told that you were once Elias's apprentice, is that true?"
"Yes,"
I reply gruffly. "He and I know each other well. In fact, I need to speak with him as soon as possible."
"The Protector has much to deal with," the captain says, crossing his arms. "He's been trying to broker an alliance between the Conclave, the noble houses, and the remnants of the King's army for some time now."
"It's important," I insist. "He probably thinks I'm dead, and what I know concerns everyone. The Ralar are on the move, preparing to attack us with a great force." He stares at me for a long moment before nodding once curtly.
"Protector Keane isn't here, I'm afraid. He's assessing the troops stationed in the Eastern Heartlands. Kingsmen mostly, but currently neutral. However, he'll be returning this evening to meet with the Conclave and some of the most prominent nobles in the city. I can probably get you access to that meeting, if what you say about the demons is true."
It is, I reply, chagrined at the prospect of having to wait to see my master. Chris nods again.
All right, then. I will notify the guards. The meeting will be here at the academy, it turns out, so no need for you to go anywhere. Remain here until sundown, and I will escort you to the meeting chambers. Agreed?
Agreed, Talon and I respond in unison. The captain turns on his heel and departs, the other nightingales close behind him. As the last one leaves, he pulls the door shut behind him, leaving the two of us alone once more.
Ugh, more bloody waiting, Talon says, running his hand through his dark hair.
He closes his eyes, resigned, then opens them suddenly, his disposition lightening at a new thought.
Say, we have a few hours left. Why don't we find a tavern? I think there's one close by. You still owe me some quality drinking time, my friend.
I don't know, Tal, I reply. I don't want to stumble into the meeting drunk and stinking of ale.
Talon guffaws, taking a step toward the door.
Oh, come on! That would be hilarious!
I open my mouth to protest, then close it again, not able or perhaps unwilling to come up with a response.
It would be nice to relax with a drink, I think, placing the book back on the shelf. As long as I'm not drinking Kurza, I should be fine. Besides, I don't think he's going to take no for an answer.
Okay, I reply, causing Talon to grin. On one condition. No cheating at cards and no drunken brawls. I don't want to miss the meeting because we're in prison. He gives me a hurt look.
What do you take me for, a degenerate?
Wait, don't answer that. I chuckle and just shake my head. Together, we leave the waiting room and make for the exit, the academy guards watching curiously as we go.